It's the Burt Cohen Show. Freedom of speech has always been a pillar of American values and principles. It's just part of who we are as Americans. And ever since 1948, the founding of the modern state of Israel, it has been promoted by its defenders as the one democracy in a troubled and troubling Middle East. Freedom of speech. Well, some changes have been happening. There is a sudden, radical, and highly disturbing new trend that has emerged recently. As our guest today, Alan Braunfeld, publications editor for the American Council for Judaism, which is founded in 1942, as he has written, quote, "If you express views critical of the Israeli government and its policies, or are sympathetic to the Palestinians and their efforts to achieve a state of their own, your views seem to be outside the zone of protected free speech." And this is a very disturbing development. Alan Braunfeld, thanks for being with us. Can you give us some examples of, you know, when people speak out, when they criticize Israeli policies, that they're outside the zone of protected free speech?
Well, unfortunately, there are many, many examples. Within Hillel Foundations, the group for Jewish students on college campuses, anyone who is opposed to Zionism is not permitted to speak. This, of course, excludes a large segment of Jews who have always opposed Zionism.
Right.
For example, at Harvard last year, Avraham Berg, the former speaker of the Israeli Knesset, who is a sharp critic of the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and has in many ways turned against the Zionist philosophy, was forbidden from speaking at the Hillel Foundation. This is an Israeli leader. There are many Israeli soldiers who have served on the West Bank and have formed an organization called Breaking the Silence, which is critical of Israel's treatment of Palestinians. They have been forbidden to speak at Hillel Foundations. But beyond this, much in the news recently was the fact that the Episcopal chaplain at Yale wrote a two-paragraph letter that appeared in the New York Times concerning the growth of anti-Semitism in Europe, in which he indicated that some of what people are objecting to is a reaction to Israel's assault in Gaza, which is just sort of obvious, something that everyone understands. Yet he lost his job at Yale because of that. At the University of Illinois, a Palestinian-American professor, Stephen Salada, tweeted some items critical of Israel's attack on Gaza, and his job was ended. Right. So there are so many examples of free speech being challenged whenever Israel is in any way criticized.
And what I find so, I can't think of the right word, odd, sort of hypocritical, is that one of the things that has been, that Jews in America have been known for, and Jews throughout the world, is ethics and doing the right thing. And there has been a long, long Jewish tradition which has made us, and I'm a liberal Jew myself, rock solid in defending freedom of speech. I mean, many years ago, there was the Skokie case in which the Ku Klux Klan sought to march in a black area. And the civil libertarians, including many, many Jews, said, yes, of course they can speak out. The First Amendment exists to protect offensive speech, to protect all speech, not just safe speech. What is it about Jews that, has made us so traditionally so rock solid in defending freedom of speech?
Well, I think that what has happened, and maybe I should just briefly explain, the American Council for Judaism,
yes, which you're...
represents the classical Reform Jewish idea, which states very simply, Judaism is a religion, not a nationality. And American Jews are American by nationality and Jews by religion, just as others are Protestants, Catholics, or Muslims.
Right.
Zionism, on the other hand, argues that Israel is the Jewish homeland, the Jewish state. All Jews living outside of Israel are in exile. And Jewish organizations in America have made themselves, unfortunately, into sort of defense attorneys for the government of Israel, so that anything that Israel does, they tend to accept. And anyone who criticizes this, whether Jewish or non-Jewish, is called anti-Semitic or a self-hating Jew. I mean, Secretary of State John Kerry, in calling for an end to the Israeli occupation and a two-state solution, which is traditional American policy, has been called anti-Semitic by a member of the Israeli cabinet, Naftali Bennett. This, unfortunately, is a way to silence criticism. But in addition to abandoning a belief in free speech, the Jewish community in America has also always been strongly in favor of separation of church and state.
Very much, yes.
Jewish groups have gone to court, in my opinion, even to extremes, to oppose even non-sectarian voluntary prayer in the schools. Yet in Israel, they support a theocracy. There is not religious freedom in Israel. Reform rabbis, conservative rabbis, have no right to perform weddings or funerals.
Hmm.
Orthodox Judaism is the state religion. A friend of mine is a Mormon. He was involved with the Brigham Young University branch in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And before he could go there, he had to sign a statement saying that while in Israel, he would engage in no proselytizing whatever. Now, proselytizing, we all understand, can sometimes become a tiresome enterprise.
Sure.
Yet it is part of religious freedom. In fact, this Mormon friend was asked repeatedly when he traveled around Israel what his religion was, and he would say, I'm a Mormon. And people would say, well, what exactly do Mormons believe? And he responded, I am not permitted to tell you. You must go to www.mormon.com to find out. So the idea that Israel is a Western-style democracy with religious freedom is really not true.
Interesting.
So that American Jewish organizations that promote separation of church and state here support theocracy in Israel, which makes me ask the question, do Jews only believe in religious freedom when they are a minority?
Wow.
And when they're in charge, do they have an entirely different philosophy?
Ooh.
I live in Virginia. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Virginia Declaration of Religious Freedom. he and James Madison promoted this, and it's probably the greatest piece of legislation with regard to religious freedom in the Western world. They were not members of an oppressed minority. They were members of the majority and believed in religious freedom as a matter of principle. So it makes me very sad to see the organized American Jewish community abandon its traditional principles and make Israel sort of the object of worship, almost a form of idolatry, like the golden calf.
Wow, it's so interesting, as you say, and I hadn't thought of it that way, and probably most people haven't. I mean, the way the state of Israel is marketed to America is that it's this democracy just like us, where they have freedoms just like we do. And for you to point out that, no, it's not something new, apparently, as you say, but that in the state of Israel, freedom of speech, as we know it, doesn't really exist. Is that accurate?
Well, let me say, though, I mean, Israel is more of a democratic country than anyone else in the Middle East. This is true.
Right.
I mean, Israel has a free press. Israel has freedom of speech. There are opponents of the government. You can say basically whatever you want to say. This is true. Yet, there is not separation of church and state and freedom of religion. For example, a Jew and a non-Jew cannot marry in Israel.
Right.
When Jews and non-Jews want to marry, they have to leave the country and marry someplace else. Imagine what American Jews would say if France or Holland or Italy passed a law saying Jews and non-Jews cannot marry in our country. We would call that anti-Semitic.
Fascinating.
Yet when Israel has exactly the same law, no one says a word about it.
So it's, as you say, a very big difference between being a minority and being a majority and being, in power. And it still fascinates me how, you know, the term anti-Semitic can come up. So, you know, sticking with rights or lack thereof in the state of Israel, can people who are there, the press, just average people, do they have the right to criticize Israeli policy? So is it accepted there?
Yes, yes. You have the right to be critical. Yet in the assault on Gaza, when a professor at the law school at Bar-Ilan University sent an email to his students postponing classes because of the war and expressing sympathy for all those who have lost their lives, including the Palestinians, he was sharply rebuked and attacked for this. There is a growth of religious extremism in Israel that we would not accept in America. One of the best-selling books in Israel in the last few years has been a book called The King's Torah, written by several Orthodox rabbis. And one of the points they make in that book, for example, is that the commandment, thou shalt not kill, really only applies to killing other Jews. It has nothing to do with killing non-Jews.
Hmm.
And the Jerusalem Post recently had an article interviewing this Rabbi Steinsaltz, a very well-known rabbi who had just translated the Talmud into modern Hebrew. And after a Palestinian teenager had been killed by several Jewish teenagers, he was asked, don't you think this is a terrible thing? And he says, yes, it's a terrible thing, but not for the reason that you think. You think it's a terrible thing just because an innocent teenager was killed. I think it's a terrible thing because it may lead to repercussions for other Jews, that other Jews may be attacked because this teenager was killed. So to me, this is turning traditional Jewish values on their head. I mean, traditionally, Jews believed that all men and women are created in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
That all human beings have have value, but the religious extremism that is growing in Israel is ignored by American Jewish organizations. They are, in effect, supporting a society which does not share the values the Jews have always held dear. Unfortunately, there are many people in Israel that would agree with everything I've said, that lament the fact that their country is moving in this direction. But it is a real challenge. Why, when you go into a synagogue in our own country, do you see Israeli flags?
Yes,
in so many synagogues?
Yes.
I mean, this to me is worshiping a state, a foreign state. And when young American Jews are told that Israel is really their homeland, that they are in exile in America, I think this is a subversive enterprise.
We're talking about charges of anti-Semitism for people criticizing the state of Israel and new attacks on freedom, really, within the Jewish community. We're talking with Alan Braunfeld, publications editor for the American Council for Judaism, and we're talking about freedom and you know, the sudden change that any kind of criticism is seen as anti-Semitic or self-hating Jews. I had a guest on here who, a rabbi who considered himself a self-respecting Jew because he is committed to traditional Jewish values, that killing is wrong. We talked a little bit, Alan, about Bruce Shipman, an Episcopal bishop, or Episcopal chaplain, I should say, who was at Yale University, and the tradition of William Sloan Coffin there, who just wrote a very, very brief letter to the New York Times. And, you know, it's always seemed to me, I mean, Judaism has always valued freedom of speech. And universities, by their very nature, I always thought are supposed to be kind of ivory towers of academic freedom and exploration, free from the constraints of the dominance of commerce and industry, you know, where ideas can be tested out and people have that freedom to do it. What does this, and Bruce Shipman, who, again, I had on this show, was forced out of his position as an Episcopal chaplain. What does it say about the power of big givers and what that means to freedom of speech at the universities?
In his case, I'm not sure it was the big givers that were responsible, because he was not an employee of Yale University. He was an employee of the Episcopal Church, and unfortunately, he was abandoned by the Episcopal Church. So I don't understand exactly the dynamics. I've read some interviews with him and have read more about this. I know that the chaplain at Yale, who is paid by Yale University, was urging him to be removed. And perhaps contributors to Yale did put pressure on the university. I know that contributors to the University of Illinois put pressure on that university to remove Stephen Salita from his position. But Bruce Shipman really said nothing objectionable. I mean, nothing that most people would not agree with.
Right.
And in the case of Stephen Salita tweeting opposition to Israel's attack on Gaza would certainly be protected free speech for a tenured professor. Another case that's in the news right now is at Princeton, where a professor named Max Gross, who is Jewish and is a professor of Near Eastern policy and is an expert on the Middle East, but very critical of Israel, was disinvited from a Jewish event because a representative of the Jewish agency from Israel, who was a visiting professor at Princeton, objected, saying we cannot have someone under Jewish auspices who is critical of Israel.
Mm.
So he was dis- disinvited. I would recommend to you and your listeners, if you're not aware of a website called Mondo Weiss.
Yes.
And this Princeton story is discussed in some detail, as was the Bruce Shipman story. So this is a regular event. The Jewish Community Center in Washington, D.C. had to cancel a play by an Israeli playwright because it took a position sympathetic to the Palestinians in the occupied territories. So this really is a nationwide trend.
Yeah. Very, very disturbing. And it makes me think of, you know, the power of big givers. I can't help but think that Yale was concerned. They didn't have direct, you know, hiring and firing power over Reverend Bruce Shipman. But I can imagine they were concerned about the big givers cutting off funding. And it makes me think about people like Sheldon Adelson, who he has tremendous power over Republican Party politics. Why? Because he gives huge, huge money. And he is pretty right-wing, you know, certainly not a conservative at all, but just plain right-wing. And many of the presidential wannabes, you know, came to his doorstep, you know, asking for his personal support. And, you know, that it in itself is troubling that, you know, when it comes to actual traditions and principles like freedom of speech and, you know, the right to dissent, which is so treasured by Americans of the left and right in America, that this power of money can have such amazing power.
I agree with you. I mean, at that Sheldon Adelson meeting, I believe it was Jeb Bush who made reference to the occupied territories and had to apologize for referring to the occupied territories as being occupied.
Right.
Of course, both Christian Zionists, the
right.
evangelical groups,
of which there are many,
right-wing Zionists, simply say, in the Bible, God gave this land to the Jews, and the Palestinians are not mentioned in the Bible, therefore, they don't matter, whatever. But people forget that if you read the Bible, and you read the book of Joshua, the land of Canaan, current Palestine, was occupied by people. God, according to the Bible, told the Israelites, go into Canaan and kill every man, woman, and child and take the land for yourself. Now, that was a primitive tribal God that I think most of us would not believe in today. In fact, I've seen many theologians argue that that viewpoint of God was not a Jewish view, but was what the Israelites had inherited from the pagan world, the idea of tribal gods. Yet both Orthodox Jews and other Zionists and Christian fundamentalists accept this as God's will, that all these innocent people be murdered. But the Jews were not even the original inhabitants of Palestine, according to the biblical account. So we get into a lot of trouble if we start to discuss 20th century boundaries and rights and privileges based on the Bible. I mean, how is it that Russian Jews, in fact, the majority of the Russian immigrants to Israel are not Jewish? All it required was one Jewish member of the family. In fact, Israel's law of return is that if you have a Jewish grandfather, you have the right to emigrate to Israel and immediately become a citizen. So the Russian Jews, many of them, had a Jewish grandfather. But then whole families have come in. There are hundreds of thousands of Russian Jews in Israel who are not really Jewish, yet they have a right to be there, whereas Palestinians who lived there for 1,000 years have no right to return.
People who have lived there for a long, long time and have their orchards destroyed, and we've seen so many cases, and it's going on as we speak in East Jerusalem, which has been traditionally Palestinian, just forcing people out of their homes and allowing people who have perhaps just recently moved to the area to take over. It's just appalling. And yet, there are those who call us, critics like our guest Alan Braunfeld and me, somehow self-hating Jews because we're critical of these policies, which seem to me, and maybe you can speak to this, it seems to me that this crackdown on free speech, this, you know, absolutely not permitting any kind of criticism at all of policies of the state of Israel, just cracking down on that, it seems to me that crackdown on free speech is what traditional Jewish understanding of the word sin may be. I mean, it seems to me it's a sin to crack down on free speech by traditional Jewish understanding of that term.
Well, it's even, I mean, the New York Times at the time of the High Holy Days had a front page article how rabbis all across the country are afraid to express their opinions about Israel in their synagogues, so they just don't discuss the subject. Many of them are critical of the assault on Gaza. Many of them are critical of the occupation of the West Bank. But they say they just will not discuss it because it will cost them their jobs.
Yeah.
But on an optimistic note, there is a reaction to this. I mean, among young people in particular, around the country, there is a movement called Open Hillel, which
yes.
is rejecting the Hillel guidelines that only people that support Israel 100% can speak. At Swarthmore College, at Haverford College, at Wesleyan University, Open Hillel foundations have been organized. And recently at Harvard, an Open Hillel meeting took place with many hundreds of students from around the country attending. So there is a reaction in the Jewish community to this attack on freedom of speech. And my hope, of course, is that it will grow.
Well, and there may be those who are not familiar with Hillel, believe it or not. They are the, correct me if I'm wrong, the Jewish organization at colleges and universities, and they have traditionally welcomed all Jewish students to be a part of Hillel. But in recent times, the official Hillel has, you know, clamped down on any kind of criticism of the state of Israel. And this Open Hillel is challenging that. And as you say, it's encouraging that Open Hillel is growing quite a bit. Yeah, and it's
not only Open Hillel, we also have the growth of groups like J Street. And of course, J Street, which is views itself as a Zionist group,
yes.
they and I would disagree. I mean, they believe in the idea of a Jewish state and a Jewish homeland. They would just like it to act in a better way.
Hmm.
They would like it to treat the Palestinians in a more humane way. They would like the creation of a Palestinian state. And they're growing. But they have been excluded from the group, the Conference of Presidents of American Jewish Organizations, because anyone that criticizes Israel is not welcome. But there are not only J Street, there is a publication called Tikkun,
yes.
edited by Rabbi Michael Lerner, that is doing very, very good things.
Yes.
There's the group Jewish Voice for Peace.
Yes.
which is doing very good things. So within the Jewish community, there is increasing opposition to what has taken place. But traditionally in America, I mean, my group, the American Council for Judaism, represents a very old view when the first Reform synagogue was dedicated in Charleston, South Carolina, in 1841, the rabbi at the dedication said, "This country is our Palestine. This city is our Jerusalem. This synagogue is our temple. American Jews have never felt in exile. American Jews have felt at home from the very beginning." So the idea created by Zionists who grew up in Eastern Europe, in Russia, in Lithuania, in Poland, in places where Jews were not free and equal citizens, to apply that philosophy to the American experience is, in my opinion, completely irrational. But sadly, that's what we have.
Yeah, it does strikes me the same way. And if you're just tuning in to the Burt Cohen Show, our guest today is Alan Braunfeld, publications editor for the American Council for Judaism, founded in 1942. He's also a nationally syndicated columnist. And again, I've always been proud of my Jewish tradition, my background, the ethics and principles that I was educated to. And one of those is the absolute requirement that we speak out against injustice, that we show some courage and speak out against injustice. And it's wrong to not say something if you see this stuff. How important is it? And it's great to hear about these somewhat more liberal and to me traditional Jewish organizations. How important, Mr. Braunfeld, is it that it's not just non-Jews speaking out against Israeli policies, but the Jews ourselves speak out against Israeli policies? And before you answer that, it seems to me that there is, we've seen articles that actually Bruce Shipman referred to in the New York Times about the increase of anti-Semitism in Europe, largely because, I think in his opinion and certainly in mine, so many people, non-Jews, make the assumption that if you're Jewish, you are a big supporter, uncritical supporter of the state of Israel. And so, you know, it does seem to me that unless Jews speak out against what we see as injustice towards the Palestinians, of which there are so many, that world opinion can conflate policies of Israel with the religion of Judaism, which can result in most unfortunate anti-Semitism. So if you could please talk about the importance of Jewish voices speaking out against Israeli policies.
Well, I think it's very important because we look back at the Nazi period and we hail all those people who spoke out against the Nazis, all those people that helped Jews, that saved Jews, that hid Jews. It's something that in Israel, at Vad Yashem, there's the so-called righteous Gentiles that are hailed because they risk their lives to save Jews. And I think it is important for Jews to speak out against the state of Israel when it oppresses other people, because then Jews are maintaining this tradition in speaking truth to power and not just accepting what Judaism is, a religion about God, a religion about morals and ethics and treating people fairly. It's not a tradition about Jews and supporting whatever other Jews do. This is a terrible, terrible thing. But in Europe, for example, I had occasion to spend a lot of time in Rome in the last few years. And at the Grand Synagogue of Rome, there was a huge portrait in the front of this young Israeli who had been taken prisoner by Hamas several years ago, saying, "We support," and I forget now what his name was. So they were embracing Israel with this huge sign in front of the synagogue of Rome. if you were an Italian and were dismayed with Israeli behavior in Gaza or in some other way, and you sought a venue to express your dismay, that synagogue seemed like a likely point because they had wrapped themselves in support for Israel. This is not exactly anti-Semitism.
No.
It can, however, become anti-Semitism. And in some cases in Paris and some of the demonstrations, this was bordering on anti-Semitism. But most of those involved in this were recent Muslim immigrants to France. But this is another long story. Many Jewish organizations had been promoting this idea of some sort of ancient enmity between Jews and Muslims. But this, of course, is not true.
Right.
Historically, Jews lived at peace in the Muslim world.
Yes.
We remember that when Jews were expelled from Spain in 1492 by Isabella and Ferdinand, the recently installed Catholic monarchs, they were welcomed into the Ottoman Empire. Hmm. So Jews have lived at peace in the Muslim world for 1,000 years. The current dispute with Islam is over the displacement of the Palestinians. It is not over some ancient religious.
And I had a guest on the show, I frankly can't recall his name, another rabbi, who actually said that not just that the state of Israel was exacerbating anti-Semitism, but that in his words, Israel was murdering Judaism. Because when people see that, well, all Jews have to line up in support and just, you know, march in lockstep, not a pretty picture, of course, with the state of Israel, that makes the people in the world think, you know, just equate Judaism with Zionism. And it is not true. You know, I know. So, I mean, it seems to me, you know, if the goal of Israel's defenders, the Jewish defenders, are saying that, well, it'll hurt Judaism to speak out against Israel, to me, that's just completely wrongheaded. To clamp down on voices against, criticizing Israel, that's what's hurting Judaism, it seems to me.
Well, I think that what's right and what's wrong has nothing to do with the religious identity of the actor. I think that you have to believe in moral behavior and apply your moral standards to everyone. In fact, you should be even more stringent to your own group.
Yes.
Than to others. But my long-run perspective, though, is that the quote I just used from the Charleston, South Carolina synagogue dedication, that was the view of American Jews, really, until the beginning of the Nazi period.
Which was?
If it had not been for the Nazis, Zionism would have been a minority movement among Jews, largely from Eastern Europe. Zionism had appeal only to those Jews who lived in countries where they were excluded from free and equal citizenship. Jews in Western Europe, in England, in France, in Holland, in Belgium, in Italy, had no interest in Zionism.
Interesting.
But after the Nazis, the feeling grew Jews had to have a place of their own where they could feel safe. The fact that that place was already occupied by Palestinians did not enter into the equation. But my hope is that as we move further and further away from the Nazi period, Zionism will become a minority movement again among Jews, and that the religious universalism in Judaism will reemerge. Of course, that may not happen in our lifetime. Mm. Hopefully it will.
I think we've seen it starting to happen. We're talking about some examples of it. And I do find it incredibly troubling that when there is criticism of the state of Israel by Jews, people, its defenders, bring up the Holocaust. They say, you know, it's like the Holocaust, you know, the fact that it happened means that anything the state of Israel does, no matter how heinous, I've seen videos of, I saw one today, for example, of some young, very young, maybe 11 or 12 year old Palestinian kids just being out in the street playing, you know, a little practice with soccer. And some police came out and just grabbed the kids, pushed them up against the building, and threw them into their car and kidnapped them. I mean, that is not Jewish tradition. These kids, I say, were like 11 and 12 years old. And it's very troubling, and we just have to speak out against that. And the Holocaust itself does not make behavior like that acceptable. And I think more and more people are getting it. And, you know, I find it fascinating, you know, being Jewish myself, there's the old joke that if you take four Jews, you get five or six different points of view. You know, it's a robust tradition. As you write, American Jews no longer know how to have a civil conversation about Israel. And
well, that's the sad thing. In a way, you could argue, and some people have argued, that Israel is like a child who had been abused by its parents.
Yes.
That then go on to abuse others, in a way, are the final victims of the Holocaust. I mean, the Palestinian argument has always been, Hitler killed 6 million Jews. This was a terrible thing. We didn't do it. You know, why was our land taken to make up to the Jews what the Nazis had done?
Right.
Yeah, it was...
I mean, it's too late now to reverse that, but now we have to split the difference and create two states that can live peacefully together, but the Israelis keep occupying the territory that has to be the Palestinian state.
Yeah.
And we, as Americans, are contributing $3 billion a year in aid to Israel, which is a prosperous country, has an average per capita income higher than many countries in the EU.
Hmm.
Yet, in effect, Israel is a client state of the United States.
Yes.
We oppose the occupation, yet we put no pressure on Israel to stop it because of the political realities of groups like AIPAC and, as you say, Sheldon Adelson and others.
Yeah.
So we're not doing Israel any favors by supporting their policy. It's like the old statement of friends don't let friends drive drunk. When a country is pursuing policies that in the long run will be dramatically harmful to it, people should object.
Absolutely. And it was Art Spiegelman who wrote the very famous book, Mao's, about the Holocaust. I guess that was done in the 80s, I think, that he was the one who kind of quoted there that Israel is like an abused child that grows up to be the abuser themselves.
Yes, I guess maybe that's where I got that quote. I remember reading him having said that. I forgot where I first heard that. That's right.
Well... Right. There's a lot more to discuss, and we are talking on the Bert Cohen Show today with Alan Braunfeld, publications editor for the American Council for Judaism, founded in 1942. You know, and one thing that concerns me is that what if nothing is done about this? You know, what happens here in the United States and elsewhere if the clampdown is not challenged? And the U.S., our elected representatives have been really under the thumb of AIPAC, American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, which can gather a great deal of money and make a humongous difference on elections. Every single U.S. senator, no matter how liberal or right-wing, they're all, you know, just whatever Israel wants, we'll give it to them. And that It's a long way to go before that even begins to change. But what happens if the clampdown is not challenged? I wonder, Alan, your thoughts on the long-term effects on Judaism and on America if this clampdown is not challenged.
Well, of course, America is a free society, and we have religious freedom. And if large numbers of American Jews come to feel that Judaism no longer is something they can associate themselves with, they will go elsewhere. So I think that there is a leaving of the Jewish community on the part of a large number of people. I mean, people go to churches and synagogues to find out, what is life about? What does God expect of me? What is moral behavior? People do not go to hear about how a foreign country is really their homeland and they must engage in efforts to defend whatever it does. So young people will drift away. They will go to religious, if they're interested in religion, they will go to religious communities that they feel meet their needs. American policy in the Middle East, in my opinion, has been dramatically damaged by a one-sided support for Israel and its occupation. Right now, we're dealing with ISIS, the Islamic State, Islamic extremism, and it's very hard to gain the support of non-Islamic extremists while we're pouring $3 billion a year into a country that is occupying Palestinian territory. So I think our interests in the Middle East are in stake, but I'm more concerned with what's morally and ethically right. And if Judaism doesn't stand for what's morally and ethically right, but simply stands for defending whatever other Jews happen to do, then this is not a religion that has staying power, because we have an open marketplace of ideas in America, yes, not only for politics and economics, but religion. So I do not think that a religion that alienates young Americans from their own country has much of a shelf life.
And I have to say, you know, there are those stalwart defenders of Israel who say we critics are hurting Judaism. It sounds like we're arguing that no, on the contrary, that as that other rabbi said, that Israeli policies are really, really hurting Judaism, and as one went so far as to say, Israel is murdering Judaism.
But it's not just. I mean, if Israel acted in a better and more humane and decent way.
Yeah.
That, of course, would be good for Israel and us and the Palestinians. But Judaism should not be focused on events in the Middle East. It should be focused on what God expects of us. What is moral and ethical behavior? What is our responsibility as decent human beings? So I think that Judaism, if it would return to its religious roots, would be a far different enterprise than what it has become now. And I honestly believe that the term idolatry is an accurate one to describe putting a state as the object of worship. In fact, even Reform Judaism, which originally opposed Zionism, has said Israel is central to our religion.
Wow.
How can a foreign country be central to one's religion?
Hmm.
I just don't understand how that can succeed in the long run. I mean, young American Jews are being sent on free trips to Israel, this Birthright Israel program, to tie them closer to Judaism. Now, my friends in the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterian Church lament the fact that their churches are losing members. most of the mainline Protestant churches seem to be in decline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would the way for the Episcopal Church and the Presbyterian Church to increase members be to send their young people on trips to England and Scotland?
Mm.
What would that have to do with religion?
You know, and the comparison is so obvious. Judaism has been around for thousands of years, survived all kinds of terrible things. Whereas nationalism, you know, the as you call it, the idolatry of a state, that's only been around really since the 19th century, as far as I can tell. And look at the incredible destruction that militarized nationalism has caused, you know, throughout the 20th century. I think of the First World War in particular. You know, it's just, that's not what Judaism is about. So,
Judaism to have, in fact, that's what the original leaders of the American Council for Judaism argued, that for Judaism to adopt nationalism, just as the world was facing the German nationalism, the Italian nationalism, mm-hmm. the Nazis and the fascists, would be to become a mirror image of our enemies.
Mm.
But do you know there's a long tradition of hostility to freedom on the part of the Orthodox Jewish establishment? Do you know that when Napoleon invaded Russia, and Napoleon tore down the ghetto walls and brought religious freedom with him, the rabbis in Russia supported the Tsar and opposed Napoleon. And the Tsar, of course, was engaged in all sorts of anti-Semitic activities. But under the Tsar, the rabbis had power over the Jewish community. Under Napoleon, the ghetto walls would be torn down, and there would be complete religious freedom. So Israel, in a way, is a reversion to that lack of belief in religious freedom. If Judaism is a religion that has something to say to men and women at the present time, it should welcome freedom. It should not resist freedom.
Yes.
And try to rebuild the ghetto walls. Israel, in effect, has built a large ghetto wall around it. And even non-Orthodox forms of Judaism are not welcome.
Wow.
So this, to me, is a sad trend that we have observed.
Just a final quick question. We don't have much time. How optimistic are you that the change is starting to happen, that more and more Jews are speaking out against some of these, bad Israeli policies, that we're getting some courage? I mean, there's been a great deal of intimidation within the Jewish community not to speak out. Are you optimistic at all? I always like to end on an optimistic note, if possible, that it's starting to change.
Yes, well, I am optimistic because I think that the brutal attacks upon those that criticize Israel are a sign of desperation, because I think the establishment that is engaged in these attacks recognizes that more and more people are speaking out, are willing to speak out, and will not be intimidated by name-calling and efforts to silence them. So I think we're at the beginning of a hopeful new trend, and let's hope it continues.
And if people are interested in checking out your organization, the American Council for Judaism, I can't help but think that there's a website.
Yes, well, I think all they have to do, acjsln@aol.com. That's acjsln@aol.com. But my experience is, if you just type American Council for Judaism in, you'll get it.
Yeah, that's the easiest thing, and it works for me as well. Thank you so much. This has been very, very informative, and I appreciate your being with us, Alan Braunfeld of American Council for Judaism. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
First thing, the occupation. nation started when Palestine was left brokenhearted. Hands down, you won't believe the way they laid their wrath on her. 6 feet under is where they left us. So bad, the way that they were killing us. Too bad, we're not afraid to die when bombs fall from the sky.
Can't explain.
I never thought that we were gonna lose so bad.
They're all insane.
There's got to be a way.
How can we get back on track? Now, tell me how it's gonna be done. Will we win or lose this one?
Don't care about the fact,
cause they are in the lead. They say we all should be scared. Palestine will never be
theirs. Yeah.
Next thing,
they're taking all our houses.
Palestine,
right from all the corpses.
Tough luck,
they had to have the guns when all we have are riots.
All day,
they're killing little babies.
So we're
defending our families.
They said
that we were out of line. Who's wrong? Who's right this time?
Can't explain.
I never thought that we were gonna lose so bad.
They're all insane.
There's got to be a way.
How can we get back on track? Now, tell me how it's gonna be done. Will we win or lose this one?
Don't care about the fact,
cause they are in the lead. They say we all should be scared. Palestine will never be.
Cause it's all that
Islam has blown out the doubt. There's no way for us to stop. Allah, stop all of the
screaming.
Allah, restore the ones
true
Palestine, it has to be the one to see. Islam will shine no matter what they try to say.
There's got to be a way.
How can we get back on track? Tell me how it's gonna be done.
How it's gonna be done.
Will we win or lose this one?
Don't care about the fact,
cause they are in the lead. They say we all should be scared.
They
say we all should be scared. Palestine will never.